Oh, man. Here we are.
Oh, God. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to another episode of Unfixed. I am Adam Jensen. I'm here. We have, ladies and gentlemen, Keevney.
Chad is back. He's in town for one night only.
Yeah, he's here and he's with us tonight. I called you the late Chad Keevney last time, if you recall.
Yeah.
Because you showed up late.
Yeah, well, that was a whole train thing.
Yeah.
Today, I left at 1 o'clock to be here tonight.
And this time you took an earlier train.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we're thus here on time.
Been all day traveling to be here.
Yeah, I know. And you took a little nap and now you're all bushy-tailed and bright-eyed and ready to be here and with us and on point. As we, the guests and listeners have expected you to be as a pro interviewer.
Yeah, well, on point, let's see, but we're going to have a very exciting guest today.
We do. We have none other than Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland. He does the public relations. He does, I think, the local chapter organization, this kind of thing. We're gonna get a little more specific about what his exact role is.
Well, he's going to tell us about a new island they just got.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much going on. My wife, Nina, and I, we just joined Birdwatch Ireland recently. We actually ran into Birdwatch Ireland at Bloom, and we've been meaning to join forever, for ages, Chad, for donkeys.
For donkey's ears.
We had. And we were at Bloom, and we saw the group, and we signed up, and we got our first copy of Wings magazine. And invited us out to see the Terns and Sandymount. We went. We had a killer time. I used my good friend Ashling's spotting scope for the first time as well.
Yeah, could you tell me what that spotting scope is?
It's like a telescope, but it's smaller.
Okay.
It's like a big binocular. It's a big monocular.
Is it the kind of thing that they use in those films, the sniper? You know, the sniper?
Yeah, exactly. That's what a lot of people use it to do, is to sight your rifle.
Okay.
So, Chad, as you know, here on Unfixed, this is a segment... focused, a segment-driven show, Chad.
Oh, yeah.
You know this.
Oh, yeah, we've got to...
As co-host, you are tasked with listing the said segments that we're going to be doing. Now, there's one on there that's a maybe, so I'm not sure. And we also have a world premiere.
Please tell
premiere.
Me it's not the publisher.
It's the Shower Talk.
Shower Talk.
No, I have a voicemail from my publisher, but Shower Talk is a maybe because Toby hasn't gotten back to me. But we can do that on the fly. It's fine.
Yeah, because I would love to hear Toby's voice.
So would I. You know, I'm going to see him tomorrow, but, you know.
Hey. Yeah, but that deep Orson Welles voice, I just love it.
Chad, on the show today, what segments can the listeners look forward to hearing?
Okay, stick to the script. I have the script. It's written here in front of me. So we have the publisher.
That is my wacky, nervous publisher. He leaves me voicemails. I do not answer them on purpose. I play them for the listeners because he's such a cut-up, Chad.
Oh, yeah. You just got to listen to previous episodes.
You got to listen to previous episodes. You can do this at unfixed.filetap.com. Click on podcast and listen to other and older episodes, including the one with Vivara Shadrova that you, Chad, co-hosted. What else? What other segments, Chad?
So we've got a Southeast Ireland update.
That's right. I bring you everything you need to know from the southeast of Ireland. I go down and find out, and I come back and I do some investigative reporting.
And we have 90 seconds with Andrea Lawson.
Andrea Lorien.
Lorien.
Andrea Lorien. 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien, indeed. And Andrea actually just sent me a quick message. She's listening now. And we'll talk to her live.
Good evening, Andrea.
There you go. So, yeah, hi, Andrea, if you want to say hi. And anybody who wants to send messages in, we are live here if you're listening live. And that is done at Unfixed Radio on Twitter. You can just send a message to @UnfixedRadio. You can also send an email to unfixed@mail.com, and we can answer your questions there. We can receive your questions, pass them on to Niall. If you have questions for us, I think you should reevaluate your priorities because we're not that interesting. Niall, however, you can ask questions of Niall. Yeah. What other segments are coming up?
So it was scary news as ever?
Uh-huh, scary news as ever. Scary as ever news.
And I am hoping to hear something good for Pet Sematary.
And the Pet Sematary. We may take a walk down that crooked, misty path into the forest to visit the Pet Sematary.
Then we have Devin's Eco Tips.
Uh-huh. It's a brand new segment we are delivering tonight for the benefit of the listeners. Those of you who want to reduce your carbon footprint, who want to be a little bit more eco-friendly, we have Devin. She does a lot of creative projects down at the Eco Village in Clock, Jordan, where she works, and she recorded some Eco Tips for us, one of which will be playing for you tonight.
Oh, that's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. Is that all the segments we can look forward to this evening?
Well, is this other experimental segment, is that just a joke, or do you want me to do this? To the Chad's Art School.
Oh, yeah, no, we can totally do it, but I need some theme music for it, so yeah.
Well, this has been too last minute for the theme music. I tried to download my Chaosilator, because I have a few things on that.
What kind of song would you think? Like, what would be your theme song if you could pick one in the world? I'll see if I can get my hands on it.
Okay,
copy.
A beat with claps.
A beat with claps.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? Here's what I'm thinking. Have you ever heard Popcorn by Hot Butter? It is the world's first commercially viable or like commercial successful electronic song of all time. So let's do that. This is a temporary theme song. It's a placeholder. Okay, can we work with that? I don't think there's any claps. I do have songs with claps. I'm just having a hard time thinking which one. Oh yeah, they're too slow.
Okay. Listen, okay.
So here's the brand new segment we're debuting here on this, the 12th of September, 2019. This is called it's called Art School with Chad Keaveney.
I think you've been planning this for a while. So I really do. Like, this has been a setup. So today I thought, how could I tell you something simple? Because I have no images to show you to help you improve your drawing skills. So it's going to be real simple, Adam. I want you to move your fingers up that pencil.
Okay. Wait, so this is drawing tips.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pick up a pen here.
Yeah.
I'm following along. That's okay.
So rather than holding your pen or your pencil down at the bottom, way you're doing it, you need to move your fingers up.
Oh, like choke up. Not choke up, choke down like. Yeah. How long should the listeners leave between the paper and the fingers?
At least an inch.
An inch?
Yeah, at least an inch.
What's that in metric?
Well, I go for
2.5.
No, it's 2.45, I think.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. And then the important thing is to have your elbow, so left or right, whichever one, give it enough space.
Uh-huh.
So you can swing
it out, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that hand, it shouldn't sit in your page.
Oh, right.
So that's going to give you you can do a much bigger line.
I feel so much more artsy already. I really
do. And you can get a better flow. So it will take time, but you will be working new muscles in your hand. And
right.
That will really help your joint skills improve.
Okay. So lesson one from here in Chad's Art School. Choke down on the pen, meaning leave more pen between the page and your fingertips. And also don't rest your hand on the table, leaving a generous amount of room for your elbow to float above the table as well.
That's exactly it.
And that will improve your drawing.
Yeah.
So says the art teacher, Chad Keaveney. This has been Art School with Chad Keaveney here on Unfixed, the debut. We're gonna put out a survey and see if this is a win. We'll see if it has an episode two. I liked it.
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
Nice, man. Nice. I dig it.
Good. And it's
I like
just
it a
little bit every day, you know?
Yeah. So typically we just go ahead and we launch into the Southeast Ireland update, typically. My only concern, Chad, is that theme song is very similar in tone in lots of ways to the theme song for the Southeast Ireland update. And it's going to sound a bit monotone, and we like to be dynamic here.
Well, it's definitely going to change. I'm going to work on a new theme song.
Yeah, and next time, you know, that was off the top of my head. And some theme songs, like Andrea's Word Up theme, that was at the moment, the day we made it up, we're just like, okay, go, and I searched the computer, and we had Word Up from Cameo.
Mm-hmm. Well, here, actually, I'm going to do a shout-out. Jürgen in Brussels, can you give me some theme music?
Yeah, okay. Who's this?
This is Jørgen Nelson. Jørgen.
Jørgen.
Yeah, Jerome in Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a standard name.
Gotcha.
But
Jerome. Right. But theme song for art school with Chad Keaveney.
Yeah,
we need one.
Because we're going to be working with him on the next... Well, I'm going to be working with him on the next project in Brussels there.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I invite you down with me to take a little trip down to the sunny southeast of Ireland, where I will keep you up to date on all the information you need to know for the very recent past. Friends, I have here in my hand the latest issue of the... We have the Bray people this time, Chad.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm bringing you information from the Bray people. Welcome to the Southeast Ireland update. We are bringing you only the most pertinent information from the Southeast. Today, the story is calls for clamping to be banned across the district in Bray, Chad. Ban the clamp!
Ban the clamp! Aren't they the like most hated people in society?
Clampers.
Clampers?
Yeah, this article is not, this is not a puff piece for clampers. I'll tell you that. So let me just tell you what's going on. So the council officials will check if they have the power to. They have to check first. Check if they have the power to pass a bylaw prohibiting clamping in Bray. All right. And the notice of motion, Controller Joe Behan has asked the council to remove a. I love that part so much. It just makes me happy. To resolve to ban clamping of cars in any car park open to the public. All right, because this means that in the Bray Municipal District. The response on the evening of the meeting is that the council does not have the statutory authority to ban clamping of cars on private property. All right?
Yeah.
So, Controller Behan said, I expected that answer, and fair enough.
Yeah.
So.
But who does this clamping on private property?
I suppose it's the clampers, John.
No, well, I thought I think
that's important. That's actually information that you would need to understand this. I don't think I have that readily available for you. Who are the clampers?
Well, I think some private people have clamps.
Yeah, you own your own clamp.
Yeah,
yeah. Someday if I make enough money, I'll get my own clamp.
But would you never consider doing that, clamping your own car?
I understand it's been done. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so he expected that answer. Fair enough. I've been approached by elderly people who have been subject to clamping in a car park at the Civic Center. They are met with this person who has a credit card machine stuck in front of them and told to pay up, which is basically like robbing them, right?
Yeah.
They are effectively told to get up to the cash machine and to take out money. That effect can be devastating, Sim Controller Behan. Devastating.
Well, I remember my sister was clamped in front of our house once. And the guy said he couldn't take the clamp off, and she couldn't get the clamp off because he couldn't pay it because she wasn't in the system yet.
What do you mean in the system? You just pay them with the credit card with your driver's
license.
Yeah,
but it has to go into the system first.
Oh, okay. So it was too quick.
Yeah.
You can't do it that fast.
Yeah.
That's and a bureaucratic holdup. That's lag, clamper lag. So listen, these are privately owned car parks. They're privately owned property, but are public car parks is what the problem is. So we should take an interest in the view. Some people, clampers, are parked waiting to pounce as soon as someone goes over their time on their ticket, and they show no mercy, Chad. He said that older residents could be attending the health center and held up with their appointments, which of course can happen. We need to do something about this. Can we pass bylaws to prohibit clamping? Ban the clamp and Bray, Chad. Can you believe this bold move? This is very progressive.
I'm trying to think about it. You know, are these swinger car parks?
No, man. It's just any kind of privately owned, publicly accessible car park. Ban the clamp. Send messages to @unfixedradio if you have any kind of comments on should we ban clamp. We'll get it back to the people down in the southeast. I've got connections. The district engineer, Liam Burke, said that he will check with the law agent. This is a developing story. This has been the Southeast Island Update.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. And that's the Southeast Island. That is what you need to know from down in the Southeast for right now. There's actually a lot going on in the I think Bray's in County Dublin? Or is it just in North Wicklow?
No, I think Bray's in Dublin still. I think it's the end of Dublin. Mm. But I always think of Bray.
What about Greystones?
No, Greystones will actually now be able to tell us. That's where he lives.
I think so. He's from the area.
But Greystones, I think, is Wicklow.
Chad, as you know, I'm a wildly successful published author.
Yes, I do.
And I also have a publisher who is he's a funny fellow. He's a funny chap.
Yeah.
He doesn't know it, but he leaves me these voicemails, and I play them on the show for the people. And if you want to hear a little bit of a voicemail, we're going to get Niall Hatch in just a minute here on the show so we can get home safely. It's going to get dark. It's going to become too dangerous to drive, Chad. So we've got to get him moving. The producer, Nina, chimed in and said that the Southeast Ireland update this time is kind of more like the scary news than the Southeast Ireland update.
Well, I'm being approached by old men or by old people. A very strange line.
I'm being approached by elderly people who are in the Civic Center. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, appointments go late. Someone runs up to you with a credit card machine and is like, you know, it does create a bit of a pushy situation.
Yeah, well, okay. Reminds me.
I don't like the clampers, Chad. The first day I owned my car, they actually towed me. Before I drove my car as a free man for the first time, I had to go and get it out of the impound. True story.
Well, but that's not the clampers. But the clampers are it's like the tanners. Historically, it's right. Like the worst job possible. You know, most of your social contact with people is antagonistic.
Yes, it's going to be confrontative. Yeah, it's kind of like being a cop. All right, except no kittens from trees, just car clamps.
It's just I clamped your kitten.
I think you have to have thick skin in order to be a clamper and successful in your job. But we do need parking enforcement. We can't just have anarchy out there in the parking spots.
But clampers aren't about parking enforcement. Clampers are about making money.
That is your personal opinion. Send your opinions to @unfixedradio on Twitter, and we'll include them in the conversation. Right now, we are going to get to a voicemail from my wacky and quirky Nervous in the Service publisher. He left me a voicemail. I saved it. I listened to about half of it, but not the whole dang thing. And now I'm going to play it for you now. How's that sound, Chad?
I think it's go for it right now.
Adam, this is your publisher, Adam. I haven't heard from you, and well, I've never heard from you. I've never heard from you, Adam. Oh, sure. I used to get the occasional voicemail or email there. Oh, but that's a distant epoch now, isn't it, Adam? In fact, you know, if it were a geological age, because it feels like one that long ago, I might call it the obligatorian. Yeah, but now we're deep into the Half-Assian period, Adam, which is an age. It's an age where you send me trash bags full of loose papers. There. Is this how you think writing works, Adam? You know, the black lawn and leaf bag I got this afternoon was just marked book. Inside was just chaos. Some of this is on graph paper, Adam. Yeah, the staff put the pages in order, and then they went to lunch. Yeah, but that was 2 days ago, and so who knows? Who knows, Adam? Now, listen, you're a best-selling author somehow. You once wrote us a book that somehow made us a lot of money. Largely through sales to animal enrichment programs at zoos. Yeah, but my point is, you're a product now, Adam. Here. And when people, you know, curse and violently hurl your book across the room and into the garbage, that's you. That's you they're throwing out. When they call 911 because one of our high-tech experimental imprints gouged their eyes out or caught fire, that's assault. And so a biography of Grab Williams, the inventor and pioneer of the hurricane lamp, yeah, just isn't going to cut it. Plus, what fuel would we even use for the intimate glow version, Adam? I got a mountain of lawsuits here that I'm still getting through. So things need to change, Adam. And, you know, you went behind my back to try publishing online a few months back, and that was bad enough. But now... Now I hear you're hanging around world cons, mingling with other publishers in the streets. In the streets, Adam. Now, I have a story which may be a little hard for you to hear, yeah, but I'm just going to say it, okay? Last week, a little man in a little suit walked into my office. He says he's been working real hard at the writing, and he gives me a nice leather portfolio. He wants to know if I would give him a shot. When he told me his name, though, I was astounded. Is this synchronicity? I asked my assistant, Cal Young. So now, anyway, he's hard at work on our next project. Working title by, you ready for this? Adam T. Jensen with T.J. Adams and Carl Dunleavy. That's right, Adam. You've got a ghostwriter now, plus a researcher, and what one with an eerily similar name. He's just like you, too, except completely the opposite. He's punctual, diligent, clean, and communicative. He uses periods. And because he's Amish, all communication, all of it, is in person or by carrier pigeon. Only. Those are the only... The only two. Now, I had budgeting department run some numbers for me there before they vanished like that into the city night. And it turns out that using birds to coordinate with T.J. Adams is 100% more effective than emailing Adam T. Jensen at famouswriter69@netscape.co. So... I'm just going to leave it there, and why don't you get back to me so that you can make a case for writing for me, for you, okay? For the love of God, get back to me, Adam. Goodbye.
To listen to your message again, press 1. To save it and move on.
What do you think? I have a ghostwriter, Chad.
A ghostwriter?
T.J. Adams, I believe.
T. T.J. Adams. But is it, what I didn't get, is he writing you, or are you the ghostwriter writing somebody else?
I don't know. I'll have to get another voicemail soon. And pay close attention to it.
I did like the book. I like the new format, you know, experimental graphic formats.
Yes.
I think
multimedia, the robot hand.
Yeah, but I think the electronic book is just overrated.
Okay.
And the bin bag full of pages.
Yes, you'd buy that.
Yeah, just beside your bed, you just dip in, you take out a few pages, yes. And you just go like that, you know.
It's chaos.
Yeah.
All right, that was my wacky, nervous, and quirky publisher. Right now, we are going to bring our guest, Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland, into the studio, and we're going to have a chat about all things avian. Who is Birdie? What are birds? Things like this, okay? Are you excited? I'm excited. You have a duck mug, Chad. You were drinking tea out of a duck mug right now.
I'm trying to impress our guest.
Is that true?
Yeah.
And did you think about it when you selected a mug?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow, that's cool. All right, so we'll be right back in just moments with Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. Bird is the word. Oh, well, bird. Bird is the word. Oh, well, bird. Bird is the word. Oh, well, bird is the word. Oh, well, bird is the word. Oh, well, bird is the word. Oh, don't you know about the bird?
All right. Thank you for staying tuned. Thank you for tuning into the show. If you want to send Niall any questions, you do that via Twitter is the easiest way, at Unfixed Radio, and we'll get your questions to him, and presumably he will expertly answer those questions. I would like to thank you to the abandoned bar here in the studio. Niall, thank you so much for coming up.
Oh, thank you. Looking forward to this. It's certainly the most unique radio studio I've been in a long time.
It is an abandoned bar. We broadcast out of what was once a thriving business. It was abandoned in, I guess, the late 2000s, and now here we do this show out of it. So we like it. We feel, I don't know, we feel cozy. We feel like that. We keep the lighting low.
It is you're right. It is cozy. Yeah, yeah. It's not as sterile as most radio studios I've been in. So
And you've done plenty of terrestrial radio, as far as I understand. You are a well tenured person. This is a major step down for you.
Not at all. But I do like live radio. It's something that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough over the years to do quite a bit of things on RTE, particularly with Derek Mooney, who's a great supporter of wildlife.
And Mooney Goes Wild, is that
Mooney
right?
Mooney Goes Wild, yeah.
That's a segment. It's a show, is it, or a segment?
It's a whole show. It's a whole show. It's been going for almost 25 years now.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's really, really impressive. Like, it gets a very dedicated audience. And for an organization like my one, Birdwatch Ireland, it's a great way to get the word out there and to spread the conservation message. I think it's really important.
Yeah. It sounds mutually beneficial to me in that, you know, he gets such a knowledgeable guest, and then you get to get the Birdwatch Ireland's organization's messages out as well. So symbiotic.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, everybody does win from it. And, there's, you know, one of the great things about that is over the years, he's built up a whole panel of experts who are really good at what they do. But I think that the most important thing about it is that slight irreverence to it. These kind of discussions need to be fun. They need to be engaging for people. They have to be entertaining to listen to. Can't all just be preachy and lecturing. There's a time and a place for that, but, you know, entertainment radio isn't necessarily that place.
That's true. Agreed. Do you think that... Go ahead, John.
Well, I wanted to know a little bit more about Birdwatch Ireland. So you're talking about conservation. Mm-hmm. Is there actual activities to conserve the birds' environments?
There are. So, just by way of background, Birdwatch Ireland is a charity. We're the largest conservation charity in the country. And we're currently celebrating our 50th anniversary. And just coming to the end of our 50th anniversary year. I'm based in our head office, which is in Kilcool in County Wicklow. But we have some of the regional offices around the country. We have a network of 20 nature reserves. We have 30 volunteer-run branches that run all sorts of events and activities. There's over 450 different free activities for the public throughout the year.
And
you can find all that at birdwatchireland.ie. But in terms of the conservation projects, we do a lot. I work with a team of scientists or ornithologists, the bird scientists, and they organize all sorts of bird counts and surveys.
Ornithologists,
that's it. Also, we do conservation projects for threatened species. Birds like the roseate tern, for example, which has been a big success story. Sometimes it can be heartbreaking because the environment is in trouble, and we are seeing that affecting bird populations quite badly. Birds are really amazing indicators of environmental health because they're the most visible form of wildlife that we have. If you think, we see countless birds every day just going about our normal daily lives. So when we see changes in their populations, it tells us a lot about what's happening to the insects and the mammals and the plants. It's really important. So that's a big part of what we do.
And the people who, like, getting all this information, this is coming from your members who are just people who have signed up to?
That's right. So we have members. We have 15,000 members across Ireland, and we have a core of dedicated volunteers who help us with our surveys. A lot of people who get involved and join Birdwatch Ireland as a member, they don't necessarily know very much about birds to begin with. They don't have to.
I can verify.
I see you've got your Robin pin badge on there.
So I'm rocking. I'm trying to suck up a little bit. I'm rocking my Robin enamel pin. I like it.
I think if robins didn't exist, we would have to invent them, because they're the best advertisement you have for the natural world. Them and puffins. Puffins the other one.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a growing membership across the country. And so when you have 15,000 members who pay you an annual fee and get our magazine that comes out quarterly and our monthly email newsletter.
Wings magazine.
Yeah, it's something that we're very proud of. You know, it's hard to pitch a magazine like that, correct, you know, to the audience that we have, because it has to be quite generalist and cater for people who are very into birds and also people who are just beginning. So it's a difficult balance, but we do our best with it. But it does mean when you've got, you know, a growing membership like that, it does mean that politicians and decision makers have to kind of sit up and take notice. Yeah. So, you know, we're getting more and more political clout, and, you know, for a charity like ours, that's very important.
And in this kind of network across the country, can you say if you're going away for a weekend, maybe just drop into one of these bird sanctuaries?
100%, absolutely, yeah. Almost all of the reserves are fully open to the public, freely accessible. The only exceptions are some of our offshore islands, which are more or less impossible to get to. Puffin Island, for example, in Kerry.
Fabulous one, yeah.
It is, it's amazing. But we run excursions to some of these. But yeah, the reserves are all open. There's no entry fee or anything like that. And then also with over 450 different events run by our branches. So on average, it is literally more than one per day throughout the year. Wow. And there's always something going on. And it's great. So with 30 branches and with that volunteer, you know, backbone driving all of that, it's absolutely superb. You know, you could never do that. A company could never do that by itself. The resources you need would be absolutely massive. But when you have dedicated volunteers who are passionate about the cause, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a great community to be part of.
I think that's the exact word for it. It's a community. That's right. And it's people with the shared, you know, shared common interest and a common goal. And that means the thing that I've always loved about birds and bird watching is that you get people from every possible walk of life are interested in it. It makes no difference, you know, what your job is, what your education is, what socioeconomic background you come from. Just some people get bitten by the bird bug, and it can happen to anybody. And so you meet one of the most diverse ranges of people you could possibly imagine.
Another kind of practical question, you know, when you're getting into identifying these birds, is there an app that can help you identify the species in Ireland?
There are several apps, one of the difficulties with birds is that there are so many different plumages, so depending on the sex and the age of the birds, it can be quite tricky. So what I always recommend is starting with the common ones, particularly around your own garden or in a park near your home, getting to know those ones first. There are several apps that do help with that.
You don't necessarily endorse a certain one, because I think my wife downloaded one. It'd be the most common one, probably the first one on Google Play. It's named after a very popular book that was like the Bible of bird watching books for a long time. So said Birdwatch Ireland Wings magazine. He was talking, this last issue was talking about the different books that used to be the manuals.
Yes.
And the last one that kind of became the book, they have an app that is apparently...
I'm imagining it's one called the Collins Bird Guide app, which is extremely good.
It's spectacular.
One of the things with that is that, if you know, for people who are starting with that, because it covers not just the birds of Ireland, but all the birds of Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East, it can be kind of overwhelming, because you're looking at, you know, 900 odd species only 20 or 30 of which might actually be in your garden. So that can be a little bit overwhelming. But it's a superb book, and the main illustrator in that is a gentleman called Killian Mullarney, who's an Irishman, he's probably the leading bird artist on the planet. He's superb.
Have you ever met him?
Many times. Lovely gentleman.
All right.
Yeah.
Because as you were saying about the plumage, that's completely true. That we were stuck in traffic on the canal. I was looking over. Like, I want to know which gulls are which. Right? Which gulls am I looking at? Are there a bunch of gulls? Because I see different ones with different patterns. We pulled up the page about gulls. It's like, this is one bird, and there were 16 pictures or something.
Oh, yeah. It takes for the large gulls, like the herring gull, the stereotypical...
I think that's what we landed on.
You know, seagull, yeah. They take 4 years to reach maturity, and throughout that, there's many different plumages. So you have the juveniles and all the different immature plumages up until their fourth year, and it can be very difficult. And that's just one gull, and we have over a dozen different gull species in Ireland. So gulls are well known as being one of the really quite difficult, very specialized groups. So there's a sort of a subset of...
We tried with a very hard... kind, yes,
yeah,
did we?
Okay. Yeah.
The people who are really, really into gulls are called larophiles.
Oh, really?
So larophiles.
They have their own subgroup.
They do. Wow. They do. So some birders or bird watchers, they really don't like gulls or find them very difficult or just you know, they couldn't be bothered. Whereas others get really, really into it. And I like them. Okay. I must admit myself, they are interesting birds.
I don't discriminate personally. I like all birds. I like my garden birds. I like. We came out to see the terns and sandy mounts. Ooh, as Wings invited us to do, and we had a blast. And that was actually, Chad mentioned community. That's what led me to contact you, was the sense I got amongst the people who are all watching through their spotting scopes and binoculars and such, that I wanted to have somebody who represented those folks kind of come on the show and talk about that whole scene. I was talking about that to some person, and they said, you know, I perceive that people who are bird watchers can sometimes be kind of loners. They're super friendly, but maybe they're on their own a lot. Would you say there's any validity to that? This is just one person's opinion.
I think that one of the beauties of it as a pastime is that you can take it any way you want. So, yeah, there would be a lot of people for whom it's a very solitary pursuit. You get people who are out doing surveys by themselves or trying to build up the best life list that they can. So it's the most birds, that, you know, different species they see in their lives or in a particular area. And that's, if you want to do it that way, that's great. But also there is a wonderful networking community out there, very welcoming people who are very keen to pass on their knowledge, let you use their binoculars, let you use their spotting scopes, all of these things. And that's really nice too. So I think the beauty of it is you can do it any way you like. And certainly when you're starting out, learning from other people is better than any book. You absorb that information, especially if it's done in a fun way. Yeah. And, you know, I know some bird watchers who've been doing it for years, and they may not still be very good at identification. It doesn't matter. You know, they enjoy it. That's, they get a kick out of it.
Do you think that there's two kinds of people? People that are like dead set on finding that rare bird, spotting that rare bird, and other folks that just kind of like looking at them a bit more?
Very much so. Very much so. You get some people are really into behavior. So they're looking, you know, even a common bird like a robin or a blue tit in the back garden, and they see something, some sort of behavioral aspect they never noticed before, and this is wonderful. You get people who like to, you know, view migration, for example. So this time of year, the birds are coming and going. Example, exactly. That's a very good example. These seabirds that are just here for the summer. But then you also get some people who become very obsessive with just about finding and seeing rare birds.
Have you seen this term, twitchers?
Yes. So a twitcher is somebody who chases after rare birds. So sometimes you'll see in the press, sometimes they use it as a shorthand for all bird watchers. There's a lot of bird watchers who hate being called twitchers, and there's some who wear it as a badge of pride, but it doesn't describe a bird watcher. It's a very specific subset of that.
Someone who's got a list and they're attempting to check off as many as they can.
And they're chasing, like, so a rare bird might turn up, you know, on some headland in West Cork or an island off Donegal and drop everything and go straight away. Absolutely. And for some people it can become, you know, an all-consuming thing. Other people sort of dip in and out of it. It's, you know, it's to each their own.
Do you think that's two kind of main modalities of looking at birds? Because we have feeders in the back in the winter, and we sit there for a long time. They make my winter so much more bearable.
Cool.
Them coming, you know, the robins and the blue tits and the gray tits and the sparrows, etc. And I think that is like most of it. Now, going out and seeing the terns, totally different and something fun too. But someone's like, oh my God, there's one other kind over there that was slightly differently marked. And while I looked at it, I wasn't like, now my life is complete.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely. And for some people, that would be like, you know, amazing, the highlight of the year or something. Different people do it in different ways. And I think that's the beauty of it is that in Ireland, we have over 460 different bird species have been recorded here. Now, many of those are rare vagrants that have come across by accident from North America, from Siberia. But we're at a real crossroads for bird migration because of the location of Ireland on the edge of the Atlantic. It's the first port of call for birds that cross the Atlantic. It's the very last possible stop for birds before they head out over the Atlantic. Uh-huh. We're midway between, you know, Africa and Scandinavia. So all sorts of birds pass through here. It's really cool.
That makes sense.
And is there a bigger population here than there would be in Europe?
It depends on the species. So one thing that we're lacking in Ireland, we have very few trees here. So the level of tree cover in Ireland is appallingly low. You know, in prehistoric times, it would have been virtually all trees across the whole country, broadly. Forest. Now the forest cover is only 11%, which is pretty much the lowest of any European country. Yeah. So that really affects the bird populations. We also have a very intensive farming at the moment, which has changed the landscape of Ireland very rapidly. So a lot of our farmland birds are doing poorly, though we certainly punch well above our weight when it comes to seabirds. So we have big breeding colonies of puffins and guillemots and cormorants and all of these birds. And I suppose that for international bird watchers, that's the where the real value of Ireland as a bird watching destination is. It's seabirds. And then also some species like the things like the Greenland white-fronted goose, which which breeds in Greenland, and then the majority of the world population spends the winter in Ireland, especially down in Wexford. And that's actually a bird in the Bird of Ireland logo. So we do have some pretty unique things that come here. So yeah, we don't have as many species of birds as they do in Britain, and in turns even fewer than on the continent. But what we do have are some pretty interesting species, and you always have the chance of rare birds turning up. I think all in all, Ireland's a very good place to be a bird watcher.
All right. I've got a few questions coming in from the listeners here. All right. So firstly, if you could be any bird, which bird do you think you'd have to pick? If you're reincarnated as a bird, you're like, okay.
Well, this is a Children of Lear question.
I know, right?
Yeah, I like it.
I wouldn't want to be the Children of Lear spending, you know, hundreds of years on one lake and then hundreds of years on another. No, I think there's a bird that's always fascinated me ever since I was a very small child, and that's the peregrine falcon, which is the fastest animal on the planet. So I often talk in schools about birds and about wildlife, and when I say that the peregrine is the fastest animal on the planet, some kid will always put up their hand and say, "No, you're wrong. It's my daddy told me the cheetah is the fastest animal on the planet." So the cheetah is the fastest at running. So they can run at about 60 kilometers an hour over relatively short distances. Now that's really impressive. Peregrine falcon can travel more than five times that speed. They dive out of the sky after their prey at over 300 kilometers an hour. They hunt other birds. So everything about that bird, evolution has perfected its design. The shape of it is like a fighter jet. You know, when they go out of the sky, the wind actually whistles behind them. I just think it's the ultimate creature. So I'm going to go for peregrine falcon.
You're allowed, just go for, why not? While we're dreaming.
It depends if you end up with a peregrine falcon with a rheumatism. That must be awful.
I don't get it.
Rheumatism, if he's a wing problem.
He won't last. Yeah, that's true. But they're so cool. They even have special, like in their nostrils, they have this like cone-like structure because, you know, if they didn't have this baffle in their nose, diving at that speed, their lungs would actually explode from the air intake. So really it's incredible. They can see a pigeon, which is their favorite prey. They can see it from over 5 miles away. They have like a zoom eye. It's incredible. They're an amazing bird.
Okay, I've got another question from a listener. What is the best bird you've ever seen in Ireland or otherwise? This person would like to add that the best thing they've ever seen was a secretary bird when they were on safari.
Ooh, secretary birds are very cool. So they're an African species, and I've been lucky enough to see those in South Africa, right in the Kruger Park, and that would certainly be well up there. I think one of the birds that really sticks in my mind is several years ago, a friend and I, we went to Panama, and we decided to go to a very remote island called Isla Escuela de Veraguas, which is off Bocas del Toro, which is the English-speaking province of Panama. And there's a hummingbird on that island, which is endemic, unique, just that small island, and nobody had actually seen it in years. And we ended up getting a local fisherman to take us out there. It took 4 hours traveling across the open ocean to get to this little uninhabited island. And I had visions of it. We'd get off on this island and we'd walk through and you'd find this bird. We got off this maybe 10-foot beach and then just absolutely impenetrable jungle. There's no way to get anywhere more than a few meters off the beach. And we're looking around thinking, oh, where are we going to find this? And then we saw these white flowers with a very sort of trumpet shape. And we thought, well, they look like they've evolved to be pollinated by hummingbirds. Or, you know, I guess the hummingbirds must come here. So we just wait by this plant, this flower, so hopefully one will come in. And after about 10 minutes, one did. We heard this buzzing and this bird came in, this lovely hummingbird. As hummingbirds go, not a particularly stunning one, sort of an orange kind of tail, green body. So we had set up some lenses and you know, ready to push the button on the cameras and on the telescopes. We called it digital camera up to telescope, you can get a very good picture, and took some shots, and it turned out that these were the first photographs of this species ever taken in history. That was really cool, so that stuck in my mind. This is good, a hummingbird.
So it wasn't just necessarily the bird itself, but your experience
of it. That was really good. But you know, I've been bird watching literally ever since I was 2 years old, so there's not a time in my life when I don't remember being enthralled by birds, and I have so many memories. If you ask me tomorrow, it'll be a different answer. It just changes all the time.
One more while we're at it. So Ashling, who gave me my spotting scope. Well, she left it here, and then I picked it up, and I said, "Is this mine now?" And she said, "Sure." She said, "Here we go." That she heard a rumor. Now she was into bat conservation. She's an ecologist, right? She was doing bat populations forever. She heard a rumor that woodpeckers were brought to Ireland via a covert operation to create more habitat for bats. Could there be any possibility or a shred of truth?
I've heard this story. I don't believe it's true. If it were true, it would be illegal. So I certainly hope it's not true. The reason I think it's not true, though, is that we know that there have been two independent colonization events by woodpeckers from about 2005, 2006. So we know that during that time period, the great spotted woodpecker, which is the commonest European woodpecker, but always been absent from Ireland, we know their population in Britain has reached pretty much saturation point. The species expanded there very well, to the extent that there would be very few, if any, territories left for young birds to expand into. They'd have to wait for the resident bird to die, and so it's a very, very, you know, precarious existence. So we know around that time, 2005, 2006, some birds seem to have flown across the Irish Sea. Woodpeckers hate flying across water, but maybe sheer desperation drove them across. Bearing in mind, in Wales, in places like Snowdonia National Park, they can physically see Ireland on a good day. So we know that some from Wales colonised Wicklow, some from Scotland independently colonised County Down, as the population spreading there. So I know there had been proposals for people to introduce, or some would say reintroduce, woodpeckers to Ireland to aid the bats, but I think what happened was that nature actually did it before that happened.
It found a way.
It often does.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? The introduction, or is it a reintroduction?
That's a very good question. So it would stand to reason that Ireland may well have once had woodpeckers before all the forests were felled, but there is no concrete proof. It's very hard for there to be proof. People in prehistoric times didn't keep records of these things. There have been some woodpecker bones found in feeding middens and places like that, but we also know people traded bird skins. There's all sorts of exotic things that have been found. So there's no way to know for sure. What we can say is they are here now. It does appear to have been a natural colonization, and they're spreading slowly but surely. There's probably over 100 pairs now in County Wicklow, and then they're spreading, turning up in gardens in Dublin and in Carlow and in Wexford. Gone into Kilkenny now. There's even a record from Mayo this year. So I think they're here to stay. And they're very interesting birds. They of course, by drilling holes in trees for their nesting, they create nesting cavities for other birds to use in the future too. So they really alter their habitat. I think it's a good thing.
All right. So I looked into the archives of these old educational videos that they used to show in secondary schools in the 70s. Okay. It's called Look Around You. I'm just going to play a quick clip, and we'll see if the science has come along. This is actually about water, but they bring up birds here. Just have a listen, and then we'll take it away.
But what is water? It's a difficult question because water is impossible to describe. One might ask the same about birds. What are birds? We just don't know.
So has the science advanced since the production of that video? Do we know what birds are?
We do, and this might come as a shock to people. We were all lied to in school. Birds are dinosaurs.
Right.
Dinosaurs never went extinct. Yeah. They just changed into birds.
Right.
And so closely related are dinosaurs and birds, in fact, that they literally are dinosaurs. There's no diagnosable difference between a bird and a dinosaur. We know that dinosaurs were the first creatures to have feathers. We know that some of them eventually managed to take flight, and their bony jaws turned into beaks, and their bony tails disappeared to make them more lightweight. Dinosaurs didn't die out. They became birds, and for sure, yeah.
Why did they develop feathers?
So this is only something that's been realized in recent years. A lot of dinosaurs, including possibly Tyrannosaurus Rex, although no one knows for certain, may well have had feathers. They may have originally developed for insulation, because many dinosaurs, unlike most reptiles, many of them were actually warm-blooded, so they need to retain heat. And also, it could have been for different kind of displays and camouflage, perhaps, or we know some of them have big crests on their heads and bright colors, because they've been able to actually analyze the structure of some of these fossil feathers from dinosaurs and work out that some of them had very bright colors. So it seemed feathers evolved long, long before flight did, and at least in dinosaurs and birds. And so flight almost came about as a happy coincidence or consequence of the feathers. So they came first, and then the power of flight, they enabled flight later on as a happy accident.
Okay.
One more question for the audience here. So do you have any thoughts on or any awareness on the research being done with zebra finches in terms of understanding neurology and how learning works in the brain? Have you heard about that?
In terms of the zebra finches, not specifically that. I do know that a lot of work has been going into the cognitive abilities of birds. We know that many species are particularly social, like the zebra finches. They tend to be the more intelligent ones. It seems that in a lot of the natural world, intelligence evolves as a matter of necessity in social creatures,
right.
Including human beings or our earlier ancestors in from the primate world. You know, if you look at animals like parrots, like wolves, like crows, all these are social animals that are very intelligent. A lot of solitary predators, and other like the peregrine falcon that I mentioned, yeah. or birds like owls, they're actually surprisingly unintelligent. I don't want to insult them, but the thing is that they don't need to be intelligent. They don't need to solve logical problems.
They need to be fast.
They need to be efficient at what they do. Whereas if you have a lot of problem solving to do, if you have to read the emotions of other members of your own species, then intelligence seems to evolve then.
Right. Okay. So I had some questions lined up for you. This is really kind of pedestrian, I suppose. But just in terms of garden birds, this is really my remit. Okay. In the bird world, this is where I really shine. The birds that are right over there, I'm pointing.
I like the way these questions are going on very different levels. You know, the latest research, and you know, in my garden, you know, the cats are doing this. What's going on?
Do you have any tips for garden birds in terms of management? Mainly, like, should we not feed in the summer, for example? When should we start? When should we stop? What is a good kind of thing to feed, and anything else? We should, of course, provide water. Should you provide bird houses?
Yeah, so yes, there's a lot there, but certainly feeding birds in the garden is a very, very good thing to do. It can give them a real boost, particularly from around this time of year onwards is a very good time to do it, because this is when all the young birds are out of the nest, finding their way in the world. And you'll find then that as the weather gets colder, more and more birds come to rely on that food in the garden. And then if you get a very sudden cold spell, like the beast from the east a couple of years ago, then you have lots of birds coming to the garden as a last resort. Yeah. They tend to see the food that we humans provide for them as, you know, supplement to their normal diet. They still eat more natural food. It's only when the weather gets really bad that they really depend on it. But you can continue feeding all year round. You'll definitely notice if you do it in the summer, there will be a drop off. The birds won't go through it as quickly because there's far more natural food around. Yeah. But it doesn't do any harm to feed them. But you have to make sure you're feeding them the right kind of food.
Okay, so it's not a harmful thing, because I was under the impression that if we fed them all summer long, that they would maybe become reliant or stop learning how to find their own food on their own.
No, see, most of the way they find food, it's through instinct, which is something that has evolved. So that's if they find the easy option of food in your garden, they'll take it, but if it disappears, the instinct still kicks in and they go elsewhere. It used to be feared that a lot of the birds in the garden would feed this sort of, let's call it, junk food to their chicks, but they have more sense than that. They know that their offspring need caterpillars or spiders, whatever high protein items, so they still give those to chicks and use the food you give them to supplement their own diet. And it doesn't have to be anything particularly fancy when it comes to feeding birds. They can eat most of the same things we can. There's a couple of things to avoid. Anything that has salt in it, because salt is quite toxic to birds. And then also anything that's very dry, so like uncooked rice, desiccated coconut, that kind of thing, that can swell in a bird's stomach. Cooked rice, fresh coconut, they work brilliantly. But a lot of people like to put out seeds, particularly sunflower seeds, because they work best of all. Like the birds, like the chaffinches and the greenfinches love those. Blue tits love peanuts. So having variety works. With suet, these fat balls you can get, they work very well. Brilliant. And as you said as well, putting out water for them is important too.
What was that? When we were young, we used to, with kind of waste fat coming off, like when you cooked a chicken, to make a bowl with seeds. Is that a good idea?
Fat from a chicken, not so much, because poultry fat is still often melt at room temperature. Right? So if sun's directly shining on it, can melt, it can go rancid, it can foul their feathers. Okay. So harder fats work well. So things like beef fat, pork fat, they work very, very well indeed. Suet is the best of all. So suet is the fat from round an animal's kidneys. And it's often used in, like, traditionally would be used in mince pies and things like that, and in pastry. But it's a very good source of food for birds. You can sort of melt it on the stove in a pot. You can then mix in some seeds and, you know, bits of fruit, berries, whatever you like, then set it in a mold like a yogurt pot and then hang it up from a string. It works brilliantly.
Okay. And housing, is it a good idea to provide bird houses?
It is. So there's only a small number of species that will actually use nest boxes in the gardens, but those that do will make great use of them. So the blue tit is the bird that will most typically use a nest box. And there's also different designs you can get. It doesn't really matter, you know, so long as they meet the basic needs, the birds don't really care what it looks like. Yeah. You want to make sure that the hole in the front of the box is the right size. So that's the number one pitfall. So the hole for a blue tit nest box, it should be no more than 25 millimeters in diameter. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that on a nest box, you think that's a tiny hole. Yes. That's way too small.
It sounds small.
It is. But the thing is, the bird itself is tiny. And when you're looking at a bird, you're looking mostly at feathers that are just puffed up with air. The bird's skeleton underneath that is tiny. So they won't go into a box to nest that a larger, more dominant bird could evict them from. The reason for that. Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen these ones that go onto the window? So like there's no back and they stick with a suction cup. What's your take on those?
I think they can work. They can work well. But if you're using one of those, I haven't really seen them available in Ireland very much. But if you're using one of those, you want to make sure that inside the room it is quite dark and that the birds aren't disturbed.
It's important.
Exactly. Mm. Because the parents particularly become very stressed. So if you do have one of those, it's best to maybe use that room sparingly, I would say. Yeah. What works really well is those camera nest boxes where you put one of these infrared cameras into the box. That opens up a whole new world. The birds aren't aware of it being there, so you can really see it happening very well. And it's a great way for children to learn about birds particularly. I remember a few years ago we had this regular thing on the Mooney Goes Wild program on RTE where they had in Derek's garden, he had a nest box there with a live streaming camera. Yeah. And one year, unfortunately, it was a very, very hot summer, the male birds seemed to disappear. He probably died. And the female was trying to feed the 8 chicks by herself. She wasn't finding much food. It got very, very hot. Unfortunately, one day, all of those birds died. Mm. And so this was still happening on a live stream. The box filling up with flies. There was lots of complaints coming in from people saying, kids are going to be traumatized by this. This is, it's part and parcel of nature. The fact is that most baby birds don't survive. And it's sad to think of it that way, but I think it's important that children aren't, shielded from that reality. Yes. I can't think of any child being particularly traumatized by that. It's real life, and that's important to understand that it's not all, it's not all children's storybooks where all the woodland creatures are friends and are cooperating. No, nature is
They're
tough.
Not?
No, I'm sorry. No, sorry.
God, this interview is very different than what I thought it was going
to
be like.
I wanted to say something that I record sound, I record water, and the best time for that is the morning. And Ireland in particular, compared to the other places I've been, is just so much more alive with birds. I'm always shocked at Dublin, the orchestra that you get in the morning, kind of that 5:30 to 6.
Yeah.
That's the perfect time to record water, and it's when everything's a go-go.
Yeah, so the dawn chorus in Dublin especially is extremely good, and Dublin is much better for wildlife than many people might realise. It's got a lot going for you. Think about the location of it. It's right on the coast. You have a huge coastline. It's surrounded by the mountains at the back, sort of acts like a natural basin. You have then a lovely mosaic of well-tended gardens, many urban parks, a mixture of different habitats and plants. You have, farming in the northern part of Dublin County particularly. Yeah. So all this kind of mix, all these birds moving through. You have Bull Island, which is one of the premier nature reserves in all of Ireland. It's internationally important for a huge number of different species. One of the standout birds of Dublin would be the Brent geese that come to us from Baffin Island in Arctic Canada each winter. And they'll be probably arriving now in October. That's when we usually expect them in. They stay with us until April. And to have this a bird from such a wild place coming to make its home, or its winter home at least, in Dublin City, it's amazing. Dublin Bay is a UNESCO recognised biosphere reserve. It's the only capital city in Europe that has a biosphere within it, which is amazing.
I remember we used to go watch the herons in the evening stand in the sand fishing.
That's right.
It's a nice childhood memory, Chad.
Yeah, like it's not a childhood memory.
Oh, that was just like a week later. Last weekend. One more quick question from the audience, as it would appear. Did having the surname Hatch lead you into birding, or is it just a happy coincidence?
I don't know. Actually, I've always thought it was a happy coincidence, but maybe it was pushing me somewhere. What I would say is that it's something that my name does get focused on quite a bit sometimes in interviews. The nice thing is, it's memorable and people know that, Niall Hatch works with birds. That's great. But what I always point out is my colleagues over the years. So my first boss when I worked in Bertolt, and her surname is Talon, which is the bird's claws. I've worked with Olivia Crowe. Donald Finch was there. Currently our warden who works on our Cape Clear Island bird observatory off the coast of Cork, his name is Steve Wing. Jeez. And his predecessor, and I'm not joking, his predecessor was a guy called Dave Bird. So that's not even trying to be subtle. There might be something in it. I've always assumed it's a happy coincidence, but maybe it did subconsciously push me in that direction.
Yeah, who knows, right? Yeah. Who knows indeed. If there's one thing that individual citizens can do to help birds out, kind of protect habitat or anything like that, what do you think the one thing to try to do the most would be?
I'm going to mention two things because I think they're both equally important. I think one is to demand that our elected representatives do a much, much better job of safeguarding nature. We have a situation where, you know, our Dáil has declared a climate and biodiversity emergency. Yeah. What are they going to do about that? You know, it's not just enough to say and recognize and have Greta Thunberg say nice things about you on Twitter. You need to actually put your money where your mouth is and actions speak louder than words. So I think that's really important. You know, we've seen a bit of a green wave happening, you know, not just in Ireland, but in other European countries. People, especially younger generations, getting much more passionate about climate change and environmental destruction and the extinction crisis. And, you know, the more mainstream parties are going to have to sit up and take notice. And they are. But we need more people to demand this. Because what we hear from politicians, when they're going door-to-door canvassing for votes, they say, well, nobody ever mentions biodiversity as a problem. It's not on the list that people talk about jobs, people talk about the economy, and people talk about, you know, schools, people talk about road safety. All these things are absolutely vital. But they're saying nobody's talking to us about biodiversity. We need them to hear this is important because it is absolutely vital to our well-being.
So maybe that in practical terms, you know, put a little post-it on the back of the door when somebody comes that you don't want to talk to, you just harass them about bird sanctuaries.
Absolutely. So we've heard now a general election's going to be called next year. So you will have politicians coming to your door looking for your vote. Ask them what they're doing to support wildlife. You'll find in advance of that, we'll have information on the Bird Watch Ireland website. We don't take political view. We're not allowed to endorse any particular party. We never would. It would be illegal for charity to do that. But we will give you questions and we'll help you to interpret the answers that you're given.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would say, if you don't mind the shameless plug, is I would urge people to join Birdwatch Ireland and become members of ours. Because you know, the more members we have, obviously the more money we raise then for supporting conservation, but also the more clout it gives us when trying to make those politicians do the right thing.
You also get Wings magazine.
How do we join? That is practically speaking. So you were talking about Bloom.
So we have a big stand at Bloom. It says we're one of the busy. We actually have two stands at Bloom. I think we're one of the busiest organizations there. We recruit hundreds of members of that every year. But you don't have to wait until Bloom. You can just go to right now to birdwatchireland.ie and find our membership section there and join. And as you said, you get Wings magazine, which comes out quarterly in the Post. You get a monthly email newsletter. You get a set of posters when you join, and you get to go to all sorts of events and activities. And I promise you, every cent of that money is spent on conservation, every single cent of it. So, you know, we really need the help.
Could you give us maybe what's going to be the next activity when we can meet this community?
Oh, there's lots and lots of things happening. Off the top of my head, because we have things happening all over Ireland, it's hard to know for sure. But certainly within Dublin. So our South Dublin branch is one of our most active in the country. Yeah. They have a meeting in Killiney on the first Tuesday of every month. So that'll be happening then. We have indoor meetings, always slideshows followed up by a weekend walk. Yeah. I know that at the moment, literally right now, Birdwatch Ireland is running the Cape Clear Wildlife Festival, which is on our Cape Clear Island, where we have our bird observatory off West Cork. So that's one worth checking out if anyone happens to be in West Cork over the next few days. It's worth going down there and having a look at that. But there's things happening literally every week or every day even. So this coming weekend there'll be several activities. Check out our website and you'll find more information there. Yeah, and many of these events are open to... Sorry?
That's just the event section.
It's the event section, yeah. Just go to birdwatchireland.ie, you'll find the events there quite clearly. They're up there. We update that all the time. And then, of course, when people join Birdwatch Ireland, you get a full list of events in the Wings magazine too. So and special thanks to our branches around Ireland, the volunteers who run those, because without them we could never stage that number of events. Well, they're really dedicated people who do fantastic work.
I was paging through Wings and a lot of it's very, you know, very deep dive information. Like there was a profile on a very famous photographer, this particular issue, and then some birds that haven't been seen for a long time, they're back. What I was kind of looking for and didn't find, perhaps you can feed this back to the editors, is that I was hoping for maybe a section on kind of novice or newer bird watchers.
Absolutely right. And that is something you'd be glad to know that is will be there. So the next issue, which will be out in November, it's always traditionally our garden bird issue where
that's my speed. That's my gear.
Well, so we have at least once a year, there's always a garden bird issue, and that sort of kicks off our garden bird survey. Right. But actually, great minds think alike, because we've been planning exactly what you're suggesting. Super. So you will be seeing in the forthcoming issues, you will be seeing interviews with people about celebrities as well, about how they got interested in wildlife, tips on how to choose binoculars, how to get involved, all this kind of stuff. So with a magazine like that, it's a difficult balancing act to try and have it, you know, the hardcore policy stuff and the detailed survey stuff and the rare bird news, and then also to try and cater for people who are beginning, but they're the most important demographic of all. So you will definitely be seeing a lot more of that.
Great. It's called Beginner's Corner, a lot of bright colors and a lot of pictures, because, you know, we're not great readers.
Either. Well, we're lucky that birds are so photogenic that it's no hardship having lots of pictures of them in the magazine.
Kind of a follow up to that one, like if say my wife and I we have as I said a spotting scope, and I've got a car and I've got a pair of wellies. Where is one good destination to go to see something kind of unusual that's not impossible to get to?
I would definitely recommend over the course of the winter going to North Bull Island in Clontarf. It's fantastic. Yeah. Easily reached by public transport. There's a lovely causeway there. You walk along it. And because the birds there are so used to people walking by all the time, you can get much closer than you would anywhere else. So a lot of these migrant waders and ducks and geese that come down from the Arctic, elsewhere in Europe or in Ireland, they're very skittish. But at Bull Island, you get very close views. If you're lucky, you can see a kingfisher there. So that's a very good place to go within Dublin. I'd recommend over the course of the winter too going to the Wexford Wildfowl Reserve for anyone who's down in the southeast of Ireland. It's just north of Wexford town, and it's a reserve run jointly by Birdwatch Ireland and by the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Right. And it's home to vast numbers of geese. There's viewing hides and towers there. It's spectacular. Depending on whereabouts in Ireland you are, there's always something not too far away.
I've got one more question from a listener here. What do you think of the terrible reputation that seagulls have in Dublin? Are the seagulls wrong for trying to stop parents feeding their children chips?
Yeah, they're doing a public service. Right. No, you see, it is a very emotive issue, and it isn't good when seagulls start associating people with food and coming looking for food and all. There's two separate issues. One thing is them scavenging food and trying to take it from people. The other separate issue is them nesting on rooftops and making noises and becoming very territorial. Now, the thing is that the gulls, of course, are just trying to be good parents. They're trying to feed their chicks. They're trying to defend them, what they see as a threat. But the thing is that the gulls themselves aren't the problem. They're the symptom of a much bigger problem. It's actually a breakdown in their marine ecosystem that's causing them to seek refuge in the cities. Because people think that these herring gulls, the typical seagull, they think that their numbers are going out of control. They've increased the population. In fact, quite the opposite is true. They're actually on what we call the red list now within Ireland, because their population has gone down by 90% over the course of 30 years. Wow. So it's not that they're doing well. They're doing so badly that they're having to resort to the easy option of coming into cities. It's very important that people do not feed them, because when they associate people with food, then that leads to problems. They need to have a healthy fear of humans. That's very important. And also, the islands off in Dublin Bay where they're supposed to nest, they're overrun with rats and mink and day trippers, human day trippers going over there. Yeah. They need to be properly protected so the birds have proper nesting habitat. We also need to make sure that our marine ecosystem is properly respected, that the oceans aren't overfished, so that these birds have proper food to eat. So when we see birds changing behavior like that, it's often they're actually the victims, and we're suffering too because of that, but it's a sign that something's gone out of kilter, and it's usually a human related cause.
And so that brings up something that brings up an issue we were talking about earlier about the wildlife sanctuary, where I was talking specifically about Moorhampton Wildlife Sanctuary.
Oh yeah lovely spot.
And the importance that these aren't really wildlife spaces but have to be managed because the ecosystems are breaking down or changing.
Yep.
And you're talking there in that case, I think the problem was cats. So and these rats and the mink, should they be controlled? Should people be trying to do that themselves, or is this a
you're advocating question? That people shoot cats, Chad?
Well, this is neuter cats.
Oh yeah, spay and neuter your pets. Yeah. That's fine.
I think responsible pet ownership is key, absolutely. But yeah, you're right. You see, Ireland is a very artificial environment. There's very little of any habitat in Ireland that hasn't been in some way influenced by man and by activities. And we've lost many species. Many of our apex predators are gone. We have no wolves anymore. So something like that nature reserve that you mentioned in an urban area, that has to be constantly managed. It's the same with Birdwatch Ireland reserves. You can't just leave them to their own devices. What would happen is, although the wetlands would soon be taken over by scrub, which would then go give way into trees, and you lose different type of habitats. So have to maintain to have a certain mosaic in it. We don't have large grazing animals like deer or cattle or wild horses roaming around Dublin grazing these reserves, so they need to be managed by people. You can then have artificial explosions of populations of rats, which are non-native to Ireland, cats and so forth, but also things like urban foxes spreading in there, and it's not a very natural situation. So we do kind of have to redress the balance a bit. So it's difficult. You can't just leave a reserve by itself. It needs to be maintained and managed.
And these animals, I presume the problem is that they eat the eggs.
They eat the eggs, they eat the adults, they compete for food resources. There's all sorts of things that can happen. And many of the young birds particularly have no defense against a cat. So they just are not expecting it.
I don't have any defense against a cat.
The robins in my backyard know damn well. They signal to other birds that there's a cat present. They definitely warning chirp.
They do. And the real warning bird in Ireland for these is blackbirds. Blackbirds give this very sort of clucking, insistent alarm call.
I thought that was the magpies.
Magpies do as well. They make it, and we know that magpies are extremely intelligent birds, and they sort of communicate. They can actually convey to other magpies the direction that the animal is traveling. The predator is coming. They have a different call if the predator is on the ground or if it's in the air. They have a specific one for cats. So magpies are amazing. The more I read about them and study them, the more amazed I am by them. They're one of the only birds, one of the only animals on the planet that are actually self-aware. If they see themselves in a reflection, they know
they know what they're looking at. It's amazing. It's actually funny. My cat was missing for a few hours, but I yelled at her and then she ran outside and she's unusual. She didn't come back. But then I heard birds signaling, and I could tell right about roughly where she was based on birds kind of yelling at my cat. So I thought that was thanks, guys.
Big shout out to the birds.
Thanks, guys, to our avian buddies. Do you have a white whale bird? Like, if there's one bird that you've been trying to spot forever and it's eluded you.
Let me see now. So there's so many birds. There's about 10,000 species of birds in the world, and there's lots that I've been trying to track down. There's one in Ireland that eluded me for many years. It's a particularly rare bird within Ireland called a bittern, and I hadn't seen one for a long time. They're only a very rare visitor sometimes in the winter. It took me years to track one down. Eventually I did, and I saw it, and I was really, really pleased by that. It's a type of heron that lives in the reeds. So that's the nice thing about bird watching. There's always something new to chase. There's always something different.
But there's no Ahab thing going on.
No, not particularly. But I certainly do have a big wish list from around the world. There's lots of species I'd love to see. I'm particularly interested in birds that are unique to islands. Uh-huh. So that's something that really interests me. I suppose one of the birds, to a degree, sometimes, if the mood takes me. So one bird that I've always wanted to see, and it's been difficult. I love a group of birds called nuthatches. Nothing to do with my name, it's just birds that I like. We don't have any nuthatch species in Ireland. They're very widespread and throughout a lot of the rest of the world. We don't have any of them in Ireland. Even in Britain, they're quite common. But there's one species called the Algerian nuthatch, which was only discovered in 1975, and it's only in tiny isolated pockets in Algeria, and until recently it's been completely inaccessible. Algeria's had a very tough political situation, and it's only just in recent years that it's become perhaps possible to try find that bird. So maybe that's the next one I might look for. I might go to Algeria and try find this nuthatch.
On the list, and this is coming from me, I think what actually got us into birds and realizing how much light they brought into our life is just throwing up a feeder in the back garden. Started visiting, and we started to really enjoy the behaviors. I mean, could you explain to me one thing real quick? Why are the robins feeding each other around this time of year? Adult robins giving each other berries.
So what's happening there, it could be one of two things. It could still be the youngsters being fed by their parents, or it could still be the pair being together and feeding each other to strengthen that pair bond.
Okay.
Now, robins are really antisocial birds. They hate each other's company. So that'll break down pretty quickly and become very solitary again soon. So I wouldn't say you'll be seeing much more of that.
Uh-huh. So it's like when I let my wife have a bite of my, cheeseburger or something.
But then hopefully it won't go so far that the next month you kick her out of the house or she'll kick you out.
It's an in progress. It's a work to be seen. So we were mentioning earlier, we have to shield precious children from seeing that birds sometimes die, which we both agree, I suppose, is a bit, naive and limited. So I'm just acknowledging that sometimes animals die. I'm attempting to segue here into the pet cemetery segment, where we ask the guest to kind of just give us a little. It's effectively a little audio homage to a pet that has left us. If you're sensitive to this kind of thing, you can go ahead and mute and come back in 3 or 4 minutes. So there you go. There's a trigger warning for the pet cemetery segment. I have heard of people actually tuning out. The ex-co-host, Sam's ex-girlfriend, used to say that when that part was coming on, she would stop listening. So,
it's time to make a cup of tea,
Sure. That's all we're saying. Have a cup of tea and then come back. This is the pets. Niall, are you still okay with this? Are you still on board?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No problem.
it's okay. So all you do is kind of just run down, your experience with the pet, how it left us and how it affected you, and the kind of scenes around that. So we're going to do Pet Cemetery now. We're going to take a walk down the misty, crooked path in the forest down to the Pet Cemetery. And let's do it.
Yeah.
So, growing up, we actually didn't have many pets in my house. My late father was deathly afraid of dogs. I mean, myself, my two sisters always wanted to have a pet dog. We never could because Dad was really, really frightened of them. And we never had a cat either. So the only pet I had growing up was a budgerigar called Peter. And I got him when I was very young. He's a lovely blue and white budgie. Never taught him to talk. I couldn't quite manage that. But my parents knew that I was very interested in birds. I'm not so interested in having cage birds nowadays. But it was lovely to actually see this bird and learn about the way he behaved. And he was lovely. And I remember I must have been about eight. And I said goodbye to Peter one morning, went out to school. And I came back home. And there, everything seems to be okay. There was a budgie, blue budgie in the cage. And I immediately noticed something was wrong. And I didn't say anything to my parents, but I realized that perhaps Peter was no longer there with us because the plumage was absolutely identical. And obviously, poor Peter must have passed away during the day. And my dad, wanting to spare me the pain and anguish of that, he obviously went out and quickly replaced Peter. Not realizing, though, that I could instantly tell that where Peter had been male, this replacement budgie was female. And that's just down to a little subtlety in the color of the skin at the base of the beak. That's really the only way you can tell. But I could tell straight away, but my poor dad couldn't. So for years, I sort of kept this secret myself that I wanted to spare my dad from knowing that I knew, so that I knew that Peter had been replaced, even though. So I don't know what actually became of people, why Peter died, or why Peter was disposed of, or whatever happened. But we just sort of then had to keep with this pretense. And I was about 20. My dad mentioned something about the budgie being dead, and my mother was immediately, "No, don't." Shh, shh, shh. I'm like, "No, it's okay. I know, it's okay." And thank you for being such a thoughtful parent. So that's really my only pet mortality story.
Okay, now we're going to let you get out of here. You got to get back down to somewhere in North Wicklow, as I understand. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Sure, and so we're going to thank you so, so very much for coming in. As I said, very big get for Unfixed, Chad.
Yeah, it was a great interview. I still have so many questions.
You do. I was doing the intro to Pet Cemetery, and you're asking about the safety of like wind generation turbines with power turbines and things like this.
Because we've got the new segments about eco-tips.
Eco-tips, yes.
Yeah, and I've always been for these windmills.
Power, who is it?
Yeah. But apparently I've heard that they're not great for birds.
Yeah, the clown that's running my country presently said that's why we should get rid of them. So,
you're
picking up this propaganda.
In the proper location, they're great. We in Borough Tarn have actually been involved with a sensitivity mapping project that put some of the wind generation companies to pinpoint the areas where they would do the most damage to threatened bird populations. Uh-huh. So in the right location, yeah, we're all for them. Absolutely, renewable energy is absolutely vital. And with proper planning and proper care, you know, the birds can be taken account of as well.
There you go.
That's a perfect answer. The community-based association of Birdwatch Ireland is helping us to make a better Ireland.
Yes, it's agreed. And hell of a pro. Thank you so much, Niall, for coming on to the show, really. Thanks very, very much.
Thanks so much. This has been a blast. I really loved it. Thank you.
We'll release it as a podcast version and then send a tweet to you, and all Twitter will be all a flutter with all bird puns and things like that. So thanks. Thanks for everyone who wrote in questions. Thank you to Niall. Thank you to Birdwatch Ireland. Thank you to the community. Who's the woman that ran the kind of the turn thing? There was a woman who gathered everybody around and just had a quick talk. The turn,
probably the chairwoman of the Saturn branch, Eleanor Keane. So if she's listening, hi Eleanor. She's fantastic volunteer.
Yeah, that was great. And everyone was super nice. And someone spotted something. They found it in their spotting scope and then let me have a peek. This Russian girl who was at a conference for oceanography or something wandered over. She looked through mine. We had some nice chats, and it was really cool. Just everyone's really friendly.
That's the main thing. It is friendly. You don't need to know anything whatsoever about birds before going on one of these things. People there are so welcoming, so don't feel shy about going along. Just take the leap, go along, and you won't regret it.
Just show up. Okay, super. Again, thank you so much for your time, and we're gonna get you out of here, and then we're gonna finish the rest of the show off, and we'll see you in just a bit here on Unfixed. Thanks once again to Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland.
Singing his song, all the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet tweet tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet tweet tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet tweet. Blow Rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock 'em tonight. Tweet tweet tweet. Every little every little bird in the tall oak tree. The wise or loud, the big black crow, flap for their wings, sing and go, bird, go. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet. Go, Rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight.
Mile Hatch, everybody. Birdwatch Ireland's up in here.
Wow, that was great.
Yeah. There's so many bird puns that I was like itching to do but just couldn't. I couldn't bring myself to do it. To sully the interview, Chad.
I still have so many questions, but the website's there. You just got to go see, and it's something that...
Chad, I have a sense you might just sign up. I know you're not in Ireland that much of the year.
Well, I'm thinking about where I'm going to be. Yes, I'm going to be in Brussels for most of the rest of the year.
That's something we should have probably asked about. The international community, are they linked in? I mean, again, like, questions are rolling off my head.
Well, I'll find out, you know?
Yes. You do an investigation on that. We'll have In the Field Bird Report from here on out with Chad Keaveney in addition to the art school segment.
Yeah, it's going to... Makes me sad because it means I won't be doing Unfixed for a while.
Why? Because you're going to be in Brussels.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, whenever you want to come, all you have to do, we have to schedule a guest. I have to do about 5 hours worth of work.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You show up, drink your tea, and talk into the microphone. So it's even in terms of, you know, investment.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'd relinquish some control, then other people would be able to do something. It's like Santa. It's like, you know, Santa, why don't you let the elves help a little more this year? It's like, well, they might not do it right.
Yeah.
Mrs. Claus.
Trust other people.
Do you know that Santa calls his wife Mrs. Claus?
Mrs. Claus.
Andrea Lorien, who may fancy you a slight bet. Oh, she also said that Niall had an amazing accent. Well, I think Andrea likes your accent, too.
Well, Niall made birds sound exciting.
He did. And they are, Chad.
Yeah.
You get, wherever you go, I insist you get yourself a suet feeder, or a suet cake feeder, or a fat ball feeder, or a bird feeder, and you too can indulge in this.
You know I like to cook, so I'm thinking about making one of those bowls.
Right. You want to whip them up yourself.
Yeah.
Right, and you know now not to use chicken fat, because it's cannibalism and is frowned upon in the birding world.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why. Not
can go
of the
rancid.
Melting. Not because of the melting. The other one's made from kidneys or something. I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, suet. It's when you make mince pies with it, and you make a Christmas pudding.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the best types of fat. It makes a great pastry.
Kidney fat.
Yeah.
Kidneys.
Yeah.
So we're going to get Andrea on the horn here, Chad.
Great.
We're going to give her a call, and we're going to do 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien, and I'm going to try to get her on the phone. I'm going to try to do it right now. Okay?
But do we know what she's going to be talking about today?
I think we're messaging, and the topic is, I think we're going to keep it to birds, all right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hold on. Let me give this a go here.
Hello.
Hey, Andrea. Thanks for doing these 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien segment here on Unfixed. We're delighted to have you be a part of the show.
Hey, Adam. Of course. Love being here.
Yeah. So this is 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien, when we have exactly 90 seconds. And we cut it off, but we're not trying to be mean. It's just to be fair, to be concise.
Yeah.
And
right.
Ordered.
I just have so much to say.
Yeah. So so after the 90 seconds, we cut it off, and then we will speak to you soon. And you just give us a spiel, as we call 90 seconds of mind business. The show's topic being of course our avian buddies, birds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super. So all right. We'll give you the time, and we'll just get started. Is that all right?
Sounds good.
All right.
So, like, years and years and years ago, I worked as an obituary writer. Yeah, that's right. The job I had the longest of my life when I was in my 20s, I wrote obituaries. Every single day, I'd go to an office, and I had to write about dead people. Every single day, I had to put them in the newspaper. One Saturday, I was there, and I'm working, and I'm, like, doing the death beat. And my boss, it was me and my boss who were there. So we were, like, at work one day, and we're just, like, blah, 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 like, typing, death notices, obits, obits, obits. And then, like, out of nowhere, she's like, oh, my God, what was that? And I'm like, what? and we look, and there's this brown fluttery thing. It was a little sparrow somehow got into our office, and like, she freaked the fuck out. Like, it turned out like she's really afraid of birds, and like, she just started screaming, and I'm like laughing at her, which maybe isn't like the best thing to do, but like, when someone's like screaming that much about a bird, like, you're just like, calm down, dude. Like, it's gonna be okay. It's just a little sparrow. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll go look and try to find it, because it kind of went under like some tables, like some, like there was a desk, some desks in the corner. So I go to find it. I couldn't find it. I never found the bird. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know. Is it still there? Is it a little birdie, like, skeleton? I truly don't know what happened to the bird. And like, she was freaked out the rest of the day. She's like, what do you mean you don't know where it went? I'm like, I can't find it. Like, I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, so thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Andrea.
Oh, that sounds great to have a bit of Andrea.
Yeah.
But you gotta keep it short,
you know?
90 seconds.
She's not sure if there's a little sparrow skeleton somewhere in the office or not. She'll never know. We're gonna do Shower Talk, and we're gonna do it just now. Anina's the guest on Shower Talk, and we're gonna do Shower Talk, and we're gonna do it now. This is the segment of the show. It's actually a standalone show called Shower Talk that you can listen to independently on SoundCloud. And you can listen to Shower Talk episodes without listening to Unfixed. In fact, it's recommended. Got a hot topic today. It's bathtub shower hybrids. We're going to get right into it. We're going to get right into it right now. So we'll be right back with Shower Talk.
That's not the topic.
I thought it was.
The topic is, if you want to have a shower, let's have a room that's a shower.
Okay, yes.
It's essentially the same topic.
We will be back in just a moment with Shower Talk here on Unfixed Radio. Hello and welcome to Shower Talk. This is the show about thinking about showering. I am top down Adam Jensen because that's how I shampoo. That's how I wash. I start with the top. I put all the suds on the top of my head, and then I use it to kind of go down the rest of my body, just how you would clean a filthy wall. You would never start anywhere but the top because all the dirty water is going to cascade downward.
Yeah.
I am here with Posh Ass Shower Chad Keevney and also the guest today. Finally on air, just for a brief moment, is the producer, Nina. Nina, thank you so much for being a guest here on Shower Talk.
You are so very welcome.
Is Nina capable of doing Toby's accent?
Oh, hell no. I can't do
stand
accent.
In for Toby.
I have once been accused of having a bad German accent.
Okay. You have a bad German accent.
Yeah, bad.
You just do Orson Welles. Do deep Orson Welles. I need a lobster now.
It's really hard to do somewhere between British and Australian, and it's he's also a Kiwi as well. It's a whole mess. So we miss you, Toby, and I'll see you tomorrow, buddy, if you're listening. But you know, Nina's here in your stead. We salvaged the segment. Now, Chad, you brought up something that you're upset with. You're just like, we're starting off. I know you want to get into the ideal shower, but what an unacceptable shower for you.
It's the hybrid. It's the hybrid problem. You know, I'm a bat. I like bats. I had a bath this morning before I came on the radio. I had a bath.
By bat, do you mean bath?
Bath.
You mean bath when you say bat? Is that correct?
Bath. Yes.
I thought we were talking about birds.
So I had a bat. I had a bat this morning. Yeah. So you were in the bat this morning. You did have a bat this morning, did you?
I did.
You did.
But normally,
where was it? Oh, this is the north. But you have your ideal. So I'm quite confused, Chad.
But no, this isn't my ideal. But if I'm going to have a shower, I just want a room with a shower.
Yeah, you're going to have a shower, not like some kind of your feet are having a bath.
Yeah,
up to your knees.
Yeah,
and up there you're having a shower.
Yeah. Or even, you know, it's the first thing in the morning. I don't want to have to step up and get in a bath.
Yeah.
It has a slightly curved surface.
Yeah.
It's curved. It's dangerous.
You can't really walk. You can't really kind of walk around. Or you're not free to move because you're stuck in a bath.
And the response to the concave nature of the bottom is that they'll put in these little grippy things, these stickers, and then so then when you actually use it as a tub, you're asses on these like these rigid kind of textured things.
Also, no normally the splash guard situation is suboptimal.
Subpar, yes.
Yeah. It's either some kind of gross moldy curtain that kind of hangs and gets stuck to the side. It's just
creature
horrible.
Stuck to you.
Or it, they do try to put in some kind of, you know, glass protection thing with like a little rubbery sealant. That, and that never works.
It doesn't. Almost never goes all the way down the length.
Exactly,
the top.
And then the whole room is underwater, and everything is just a horrible nightmare.
Or the times when they have those little glass, things to take the spray from the shower, but you know,
that's what we were talking about. Pay attention.
But I am paying attention.
You mean like little panel?
Yeah, the panel. Mm-hmm. But there's different qualities to the panels.
Right. Some are sliders. Some are hinged.
No, it's the quality of the glass. Ah. Some of the glass is limescale proof.
Oh, what?
How does that work?
That exists?
Yes, it does exist. They don't tell you about it because it's damn expensive. But if you're going to have a posh shower,
they don't tell you about it because they can tell from what you're wearing that you can't afford it.
You could never afford the anti-limescale.
If you're going to have a shower and not a bath every morning, do you have the time to clean that goddamn panel every morning? No, you don't.
No, it's horrible.
So put the extra money in and get the limescale proof.
I mean, we have those panels and they're horrible. They do get dirty.
We have a squeegee situation. We have the squeegee set up. But do we use it?
Yeah. Well, I do. It depends where I am. If there is a squeegee available, I will squeegee every morning.
That's really diplomatic of you. That's very nice. It's very good. So, Chad, you're again standing in a bathtub and having a dang shower.
Yeah, no, I'm so old for Italian showers.
Uh-huh. Now, explain that to the... Say that in Italian, because I know you can.
Okay, I can't say that in douche à l'italienne. That's how you say it in French, douche à l'italienne.
But you just said it with an Italian accent in French.
Well, you know, there's a lot of Italian... There's a lot of French-speaking Italians.
So, the ultra-rich posh shower, Chad Keevney, is here to tell us about... You get rid of your stupid bathtub, tile the entire room, and have a room itself be a shower, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Choose one or the other.
Right.
Yeah. Choose one or the other. Don't go for this kind of halfway, I'm not sure what I want.
Yeah. Pick a side, people.
Exactly.
If I had all the money and space in the world and I could build my own house, oh my God, yes, that's what
room.
I would do.
Some people call it the wet room, right?
I mean, like, people call our bathroom a wet room, but it isn't really. Like, there's still a toilet in it. No.
There's a toilet.
I just want a room that is just a shower. Like, it's extra, like a special little room.
No, the best shower. This was Macau. This is where I've
heard of this. Devotees of the show will have heard about the shower at Macau before.
Yeah, well, I do actually have a book of beds I've slept in. That one was only like a year and a half. The next one, I think I'll do 2 years. There's been a lot of beds the last year and a half. Uh-huh. But I know my showers. I definitely do. And now Macau, it's up there at the top. This is an illegal build, of course, on top of a building in Macau.
On top of the building.
Yeah,
the shower's on the roof.
It's the whole place where I was staying was on the roof, but it's all this. It's all it can be knocked within 24 hours and gone.
Okay, so it's like, you know, it's collapsible, like a meth lab. It could be torn down.
Exactly, that's exactly what it is.
Your whole apartment.
And it's the toilet is in the shower, and you go to the toilet. And you have a shower at the same time.
No.
And you can open the door and you can leave your little book there and you can read and go to the toilet at the same time. It's just brilliant.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it though?
It's so relaxing.
I don't know.
But books get wet. Nina, I'm against books and baths.
No, because that's why the shower door is there. The book don't get wet.
Look, the book is not what I have a problem with here. The book is not the problem.
It's the number two and the running guy.
Oh, no, that's the best part. It's a very strange sensation. Okay, Chad, it's damn clean.
Because when you first described this thing, I pictured a custom built, like, kind of, wouldn't it be nice to be outdoors, be able to sit, go to the bathroom, and shower all kind of in the same little alcove? But what you're describing is just, this is based on necessity. And it's basically like bare PVC pipe against a concrete brick wall in an illegal build on top of a building that is temporary.
It is tiled, but pretty much that's it, yeah.
And you can just, it's plausibly deniable. Your entire living situation is plausibly deniable.
I try it. No. You don't know what you're talking about until you try it.
I've just been sitting here just for like 2 minutes and kind of thought about it, try to put myself into the situation, and I must say it's not.
It's one thing to do it. It's another thing to admit you've done it.
and to think about doing it is something entirely different as well. Like, just to point out, Nina, like, your mom's place is custom built from the ground up, and she could basically have designed it however she'd like, and she's got a situation going where the whole bathroom is kind of all tiled.
Yeah.
The shower area is a bit of a stall with no real, like, with no curtain or anything you walk into. Bathtub in there as well, sink going, you know, toilet and a mirror and, you know, the whole kind of makeup stand.
Yeah, but the shower in of itself is almost its little sub-room.
It's almost a little room, indeed.
Yes, and so is the toilet.
Yeah.
And the rest of the bathroom is open.
That's true.
Yes, that's the ideal bathroom.
What do you think about that, John?
Well, that sounds great.
Okay, we've landed. So, Heike Brunson, we've got you. We need the blueprints. We need to put it out on the website. We have to tweet it out on the Shower Talk Twitter.
We have decided that this is the ideal bathroom.
All right, so thank you for being on Shower Talk. Subscribe to Shower Talk on, I guess, SoundCloud. We're on Twitter at @shower_talk. We'll be back with more Unfixed here on Unfixed. This has been Shower Talk. Shower Talk now. Chad, do you feel dirty or clean now?
Well, I was thinking about that underscore shower talk.
It's all I could get, man.
Yeah, but I thought the underscore was maybe a bit too much.
But the underscore is like, if you look at it, it's deliberate, and then that is the where you stand where the water cascades on you from the R.
Okay. So it's a kind of visual pun.
It's a logo. Like, FedEx has the arrow in their logo. Yeah, that kind of thing. We have another a brand new segment here. Okay, we have got Devin Oss is here to do do eco tips. Okay, I'm pretty excited about this dang thing. How are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm feeling a bit nervous because I think it's going to make me feel guilty about my lifestyle. But this is the Eco Village in Clochjordan.
That's correct.
Another place that one should visit in Ireland.
You should head on down and check out the Eco Village. It's a good place. Yeah. She plugs it. She doesn't need you plugging her stuff. She knows what she's doing. She does outreach. She does all this stuff. They have a tented electric picnic. I was going to go, but the weather looked bad, and so did the lineup, so I didn't go, Chad.
Okay, well, yeah, I just wouldn't go to a festival outside in Ireland.
This is Devin Oss, the debut of Devin's Eco Tips here on Unfixed. So you
wanna all right, we all want to take care of the planet, man. So, like, let's just kind of get into it. So we've got Devin Oss. Devin, you're not just some, the hippie. You work in the field. Where do you work?
I work in Clochjordan.
Right, in the Eco Village.
I work in the Eco Village area.
And you shape young people's understanding of how to, like, keep it together.
I do some environmental education, yeah.
Right. All right. So if you have one tip to give to our listeners, what would it be?
So this one's a tip and a recipe. So we all know that we should eat less meat. That's better for the environment. But if you're looking for some pulled pork and you don't want to eat meat, one thing you can do is you can take banana peels and turn it into pulled pork. So you take an organic banana peel, cut it into thin shreds like strings, cut down the banana peel, throw that in a pan with some oil, add your barbecue sauce and cook that till it's tender, throw it onto a bun, and you've got vegan barbecued pulled pork.
I am so into it that I'm a little bit embarrassed.
Well, it's a good way to use everything. If you bring that banana over from Costa Rica, you've got a lot of carbon miles on it. So eat the banana and eat the peel.
You are swinging for the fences. I try to not eat meat once a week, Devin.
That's a good move.
It's kind of shitty. Like, and often I wind up eating a ton of tofu, smoked tofu.
Soy products, yeah.
We will check in with you next week, Devin. In terms of eco tips, taking care of the planet, and thanks for tuning in.
If you wanna get up, get down like this.
Those are eco tips. What do you think? New segment, Chad.
I think I will have to be drunk to try the banana skin, but I'm definitely.
Look, I think that you're a culinary guy.
Yeah.
All you do is, you follow the instructions on Devin's eco tips. I think just now, cut it real thin
Does the banana skin need to be kind of like brown and kind of going off?
How do you know when it's done, Devin? I don't believe it needs to be on its way out before you can do so. I don't think so.
Yeah,
but Devin, if you're still out there listening to the show, if you can walk hold Chad's hand through this, because he's having trouble.
Well, you've got to try it out, and I do think that whole idea of being a good Catholic and not eating meat once a week is good.
I do it on a Wednesday. Because you know what? Meat-free Monday, like, no. We're against them, actually. We are vegetarian Wednesdays, Chad.
Vegetarian Wednesdays,
yeah, we're like, we're Central and Scandinavian Europe.
Well, you know, I couldn't do meat-free Mondays because I go to market on Sundays. Uh-huh. So it's when I have most of my meat is on Sunday.
How quaint.
Yeah. I can't put Francois out of business. I already feel really bad for Donal.
Wait, why?
In my butcher, I don't buy as much as I used to.
Okay. You know what? Like, it's an adapting world. He's going to maybe have to stock some veg and some meat alternatives as well. Yeah, you not have some veggie patties or something?
He does. No, like veggie patties. No, that's just twisted. People who want to stop eating meat by replacing it by vegetable substitutes, that's just weird.
It's not weird. It's a good thing to try. And if you ever had like the Impossible Burger or the Beyond Burger, they're spectacular and will convince you that you won't actually even miss it, because if you want that savory, indulgent experience, you can still have it without actually no animals.
Well, I think you can eat perfectly well without trying to fake meat.
I think that that's true, but I think that I don't think you should criticize people who like to use meat substitutes. That's all I'm saying. And I think a lot of vegetarians like to criticize people who like to use meat substitutes.
Well, I think the problem with the meat substitutes is the amount of stuff that goes into producing these meat substitutes. So what's the Linda McCartney burgers are full of genetically modified soybeans.
Uh-huh. Monstrous.
Yeah.
That's the problem. We should tell people, just keep eating meat or start eating raw peppers. Those are your options.
No, learn to cook.
Uh-huh.
That's the alternative.
That's such a heavy lift, though. I can't do that. All right, friends.
You know you can.
As we start to get a bit kind of creepy here on the show.
Scary news.
Yeah, it sounds like it's time for the one.
It's time for me to go to the toilet. I need to get out of here.
Is that true?
Oh, it's going to make me too scared. I won't be able to sleep after this.
Chad has to pee pee because it's time for
the scary news.
All right. Yeah. So listen, it's the scary news. A San Francisco woman who befriended the crows that frequent her apartment window said that they have an arrangement. She gives them food and they bring her gifts. Melinda Green said she started feeding two families of crows that congregate outside her Marina District apartment about 3 years ago.
This is going to start a gang war.
Crows are kind of, you know, associated with death and scary stuff, right?
They're very intelligent, and they sound more intelligent than her.
Green told KGO-TV that she and the crows have what she likes to call rules established.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. That's, you know what I'm saying? They have an
cultish
order.
Yeah.
Right. They have rules established. Well, they will watch for her blinds to be open and then come to collect treats from her fire escape, landing, and windowsill. She said the crows started leaving her gifts in exchange for the food, tributes, sacrifices. She said they have brought her portions of a champagne bottle, gummy bears, colorful rocks, bones, nuts, and strange bits of odd, obscure, antique electronics.
This sounds too much like a Netflix aimed at late teenagers.
Where's she from here? San Francisco. At this point, I'm sure they're gifts. They're showing appreciation for the food. Researchers have documented crows bringing, quote, gifts to people who feed them in the past. Green said she has learned a lot from her interactions with crows. I learned just about how similar crow families and dynamics are to human families, she told the Dodo. They seem to have long-term relationships and raise one or two children at a time. In nuclear families, the parents are clearly actively teaching their children. They clearly want to show them where the nice lady lives and how to get treats from her. What do you think of that, Chad?
Sounds like she might have a nephew or a niece.
Yeah, right? Okay. Two more scary news items, and then we will let you go. Residents of an Ontario neighborhood captured photos and videos of some unusually behaving raccoons that experts have said were likely drunk from eating fermented fruit.
Oh, wow.
Emily Rogers said she arrived home Monday to find a raccoon stumbling around oddly in her backyard in the Stittsville area of Ottawa. He couldn't really move. He was dragging his legs, eh? He was wobbling, having a hard time standing up. Like, you could tell something was wrong with him for sure.
Was it slippy?
Robbins told the CBC News. That's Irish, not Canadian. Another area resident, Julie Fong, said a bylaw officer came to her door Sunday asking her to go into her backyard to look for a raccoon spotted in the area that a witness said appeared to be intoxicated. Somebody knocks on your door and goes, "We need you to help look for a raccoon that people think is drunk."
No, but what was
that? What were you doing otherwise? Like,
no. Is that a bylaw officer?
A bylaw officer.
What's a bylaw?
No, I'm not Canadian. I don't.
That is just like, I only handle the unimportant.
So that's why this guy was kind of sleeping it off under our deck, eh? Fong said there was a drunk raccoon under our deck. Runt said the best thing to do is leave the raccoons to sober up on their own. Don't try to give them coffee.
And have them, to give them
just
coffee.
Let them run its course. If you're really concerned about the animal, call some of the animal control officers to come have a look at it. Police in Milton, West Virginia said in November 2008 that some raccoons spotted acting strangely in the area had prompted numerous calls about potentially rabid animals, but the raccoons turned out to be drunk from eating fermented crab apples.
This sounds too much like a, you know, it's a euphemism. Raccoon is a euphemism for something, and you know, the next time
you're circling it, Chad. Come back.
But, no, the next time, like I get cold drunk, I say no. It was just I had too much.
I ate these really old apples.
Yeah, exactly. It was just too fermented there. I think
went
it's
under
the
deck to sleep it off. Don't try to give me coffee.
Yeah, exactly. And who gives raccoons coffee? Like, who sees, oh, God, he must be a drunk raccoon. Make some coffee there. This, need
is
fresh.
This is why it's scary, Chad.
Yeah.
This is the last scary news item, and then we're going to get out of your hair, out of your ears. All right. So a bull jumped a 7-foot fence at a farm auction house in Ontario and managed to avoid being captured by authorities and members of the public. The young bull jumped the fence before he was due to be auctioned Thursday at the Ottawa Livestock Exchange, and he took off running. Ottawa resident Ken Trasker, who has farming expertise, spotted the 600-pound bull charging through the area and pursued it in an attempt to corner the animal. Trasker said he gave up the chase when the bull appeared to be aggressive. Ottawa police said traffic officers attempted to locate the bull Thursday afternoon, but it had apparently left the area. Police asked anyone who spots the wandering bovine not to approach it, but instead to call 911. This has been the scary news for September.
It's
only going to get scarier as we approach October, folks.
But it's just I'm trying to, you know, members of the public failed to stop the bull. Who's going to try and stop a bull?
Yeah, the guy did. He's like, nope.
Yeah.
He goes out there with his bare hands. He's wearing boxing gloves.
Yeah, he got close enough to realize the real size of it. I thought he was far away. No, he's
he thought it was small. It turned out it was just far away.
Yeah.
That has been the scary news. And so we're going to get the hell out of here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Sincerely, if you can hear me say this, I'm speaking to you directly. There's no point in doing all this stuff if no one actually hears it. So thank you. Thank you for listening to the show. Chad, do you have any shout-outs? Do you have a project you want to plug?
Oh, well, I should plug the next project, Diagonal Work. It's going to be in the MAGA in Brussels, starting on the 29th of September, running through the 27th of October. We're going to be three painters working in the space, and the Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and Sunday afternoons, we're going to have an open mic for artists to talk about doubt in their practice.
Doubt.
Yeah.
You're going to have an open mic and people can come and listen to artists have open mic stuff about how they doubt themselves.
No, how doubt allows them to continue and pursue their work. It's a very important part in the creative practice.
Right, okay. I think in any profession as well, you know.
Well, I think less and less in most professions, but yeah. I think it was far more important before.
Less and less. You think people are too confident.
Yeah. I think they can never talk about their doubt.
Right. Okay. We're going to leave you with a song called "The Art of Doubt" by Metric here.
Yeah. Oh, I should plug the website, shouldn't I?
Yes.
Doubt It'll Work Home dot home dot blog.
Say that again, please.
Doubt It'll Work dot home dot blog.
Doubt It'll Work. Is that ITLL with no apostrophe?
That's exactly it.
Okay. Doubt It'll Work dot home.
Dot blog.
Alright, it's a snappy URL. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you to Chad Keaveney, the late Chad Keaveney, for showing up, for hanging out.
The late, I'm still here.
You were here one more show in which you're on time, and we'll get rid of the moniker. Alright, thanks for checking out the show, and we'll see you soon, hopefully for a Halloween episode. Take care.
Thank you so much. Good night.